Welcome. William Evans here, and you are listening to another Living World Story. Our guest today is Evan Pritchard, director of the Center for Algonquin Culture in Woodstock, New York, and the author of multiple books. Today we're focused on a new edition of The Temple Within, the fourth book of light. Welcome, Evan.
Thank you, William. Good to be here.
So your original printing of 4,000 copies of The Temple Within has sold out, and you are going forward with a new printing for which there's been a nice response. People like it.
Yeah, I felt it was a very sacred thing to me, and I didn't want to go overboard with, trying to sell it. But I had the 4,000 copies, and I basically went around as I saw people who seemed interested. I would sell them single copies out of the back of my car, and I guess that if I sold 400 a year over all those years, I sold out the 4,000 copies. And so a friend of mine from Colorado encouraged me to go back into print and using more modern methods, and it's done well in just a short time.
You moved to New York City in...
Oh, I moved to New York City in 1977, right out of college. I was very young. And as soon as I moved to New York, that's when these dreams started. I started having dreams about this library, and the library seemed to be in a temple in these dreams. And there was a Tibetan fellow who was kind of the librarian. And in dreams, you know, anything is possible, but they became very consistent, repeated dreams. And there was this book of light. It was a book that glowed with light, and you could actually see the characters. But when I looked carefully at them, they were like, it was more like Sanskrit or Hebrew letters, but actually not exactly any of them. But he could read from them. And so we ended up, you know, I said, can I write this down? And he said, yeah, you can write any of them down. I said, what do you mean, any of them? He said, well, there's 12 libraries, and you can write whichever one down you want, if that's what you want to do. And so I said, okay, which library? He said, anyone? I said, okay, and I chose the number 4. And it turns out that's pretty much where we were. It was the fourth of these libraries. And so I began to find a way to travel to this place in my dreams. And kind of developed that technique of interdimensional bilocation. It's not something I do all day, but it became, you know, very compelled to complete the book. It took me 7 years of directed dreaming, or conscious dreaming, as some would call it, to write down all the words.
Wow.
There's a lot more to it, but, you know, we talked about how to make it more clear and simple. But let me say, William, you know, I know you're a man of science. You've been around with very smart people, and the people that I was dreaming about were incredibly smart, much more intelligent, you know, than your average human. And sometimes the wordings were mind-boggling, and I said, could we, like, slow this down? And anyway, so 7 years later, I finally went back to it and finished it. And then it was published almost immediately. There's been a lot of synchronicity in the story of this book, some of which involves Colorado. But I had my own bookstore, and when I went in with the book for the very first time, I had the manuscript completed. I brought that physical manuscript into the bookstore, and as we opened, this man walked in and said, you know, have you written anything lately? I said, yeah, I just finished this today, the fourth book of light. He said, I will publish it. And I said, what do you mean? You know what you're saying. He said, yes. I said, that'll take $5,297. I mean, I made up the thing. And he pulled out his checkbook, and he wrote me the check for that exact amount, and he says, publish it. So that's where those 4,000 copies came from.
Wow, what a magical story.
What a kickoff.
So my experience with this book is reading The Temple Within is a flow of illumination and confirmation when I'm on the trail.
Yeah.
One of the things that that caught my attention right away was the line, "A human cannot know the old adage, know thyself, unless he or she cultivates a relationship with Source." And I've been on a serious relationship with Source for a number of years now, and certainly feel this is true for me.
And you wrote a book with a similar title to Source, Circulating. Could you remind me of the exact title?
Circulating Source Water, right. Yeah.
Yeah, Circulating Source Water, which is the ultimate metaphor. And that does tie in metaphorically with what we're talking about, right?
Right.
It's all circulation of something. Consciousness, which is fluid, which flows constantly. You know, the spiritual consciousness, if you want to call it that, is not contained completely. It always wants to flow to the next thing so that it doesn't become stagnant. And the Source, you know, I mean, that's such a deep, if you excuse the expression, a deep thing. The Source is deep. And, you know, in a lot of what I do involves, you know, Native American culture, not so much this book, but, you know, the water in a source is called sweet water.
Right.
Because as it comes up, it's sweeter than the water that's downstream. And the same way that when you know you're getting close to the source of consciousness because it's more beautiful, it's sweeter. There's a sweetness. And that's why I believe a lot of people pursue religion, which has its own downfalls and limitations. But in religion, there is this phenomenon where the more deeper in you go, and by in, I mean going through these various planes of reality and consciousness, that you know, you reach this place of joy and sweetness. And that's the way you know you're getting close to the source. And nobody can say, well, this is the source and that's the end of it. If you can keep going, it gets sweeter and sweeter. And some people experience tears of joy when there's nothing particularly happening except in their consciousness.
Yeah, and when the tears flow, the soul is dancing.
Yes, and it's also purified.
And so,
you know, we collect all kinds of little injuries as we go. And it's purified of those wounds.
Particularly,
and the soul dances. Right.
Particularly meaningful to me recently has been when I read Devotion to God is Soul Reaching Out to the Source of Renewal, the Source of Love.
Oh, yeah.
And beauty.
Yeah.
And beauty is God reaching out to soul to help renew it. For beauty is love in motion.
Yes. And when I experience a new source of beauty, like a new, even through the arts, you know, I love music and painting and poetry. And when I experience a new source, like a new piece I've not experienced, then I tend to cry a lot. Because that's touching into that healing source of beauty. And that happened, by the way, yesterday. I was very moved by a piece by a composer I'd never heard, Florence Price, by the way, who is an African-American. And the music just, you know, opened me up emotionally. And I mean, that happens frequently. I had a dream. I'll tell you this dream because it ties in with this and a new book I'm working on. I'm coming out very soon, the book called A Silver Feather, and it's about ascendant art, which I also dreamed about, you know, I was in a place outside of Earth looking at Earth, and this teacher was saying that, you know, there's a woman named Margaret on Earth, and they didn't tell me where. She said, it doesn't matter. She's somewhere out there. And she's a housewife, and she is inspired by her spiritual experiences to paint. And her only motivation, and I think you like this, William, her motivation is simply to create and to share and to put that beauty into form and to let it flow and then go to the next painting. And then people, when the people see these paintings, they're healed. And spiritually and physically. And the thing is, of course, you know, they might suddenly want to paint. It's like catching. And so this teacher said, and this is in a dream, he said, this is ascendant art. And was like, we want you to pay more attention to this and what you do. I was like, oh boy, okay. So I'm putting up this book called A Silver Feather, which is the ascendant poetry of Evan Pritchard. And it's a very devotional practice. You're just doing something for art's sake. I remember that old expression, artis gratis artis, that the Romans used. It means art for art's sake, and that's kind of what it is. You know, it's pure. So I hope that relates to what you were saying.
Yeah. So beauty is health.
Yes.
And yet our world is filled with sickness.
Yes.
Why?
Why?
Well, I can tell you what Fourth Book of Lights says,
and it goes on.
And I found it a very profound explanation.
All right, I think.
Our world is filled with sickness because man is now learning about power by trial and error. And the misuse of power destroys beauty.
Yes, Paige, thank you. And that's true. I accept that as truth. Because the thing is that, you know, when the book talks about, and this is the third chapter, Love Life, I believe, and it talks about the nature of power. And it's very interesting because it talks about the two aspects of it, and that there's a creative power and a power to put things together and to synthesize things, and a power to group things together and even contain them. But there's also a power of chaos, the ability to destroy something, and that could be chaotic or not. And all this power can be divided into one or the other, and sometimes you can experience both at once, and that's a true transformational power. But sometimes, you know, you get caught up in dividing, and you know, one side against the other, a creative side and a destructive side. And there's lots of ways in this universe to get caught up into these whirlpools of power struggles. But you need the power of some kind to manifest the beauty. But if you get torn up by getting into the wrong current with this power and destruction, then you're no longer mastering it. You become the reaction to it. You become the effect of it instead of the creator of it, and it can tear you apart. And so what happens is that this kind of an ugliness happens because, and that's a funny word, isn't it? But because beauty can get stuck. And when the flow of consciousness is stuck, then beauty gets stuck. And that's what we call ugliness. But it's really because of the misunderstanding of power, or even the limited understanding of power, and then things just happen. Things can go awry for whatever reason. And these two opposing forces can get stuck in each other and start to create chaos. So, yeah, then that's what happens where we get sick. And I think that my belief is that when things happen, when people have accidents, that often there is some conflict in that person's life, and it's either internal or it could well be from the outside. I've just seen this, that there's, you know, people having negative thoughts towards somebody, and they pick up on that, and they dwell on it, and then they're more accident prone. So what I do is every day I say what do you call it? An aspirational prayer for the universe to protect me, to surround me with a shield of healing white light that nothing can penetrate for the next 24 hours, and I visualize it happening 24 hours into the future. because there's all kinds of possibilities of, you know, again, people outside of us sending those kind of chaotic thoughts, making us trip, or ourselves, our own internal dialogue could become tripped up between the concerns about destruction or cleaning out or renewal and, you know, the creative act. And so you mentioned renewal, and that is very important, you know, in the native tradition of renewal. And it's not exactly like being born again, but on the other hand, it quite is like that. When you're healed, they say you're renewed, you're remade. And it's very specific about that. Wichite. It's a word for it.
I recently lost my balance and had a fall, resulting in some injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been very attentive to what I read, the disruption of balance and temporary dissolution of beauty strengthens the soul in its love and its resolve.
Now, that's pretty deep stuff.
So,
but yes.
So that the soul, my soul, will become stronger, strong enough to handle the opposing powers and forces thrust upon it, and shape something of beauty, such as a human life, from them.
And the resilience factor is, people talk about today about, you know, resilience, especially in the Native American history, how people have been resilient over 400 or 500 years of oppression, and that's a responsibility we have, to be resilient, because you know that both the creative and destructive forces can pull us apart, but there are ways to be resilient. And so visualizing your intention to be resilient is an answer.
And
I don't know if that addressed everything you said, but it's hard.
Proceeding calmly is a way. My calm is my sword. It penetrates the confusion of habitual thought. It perceives and cleaves lives from truth, fear from faith, and the known from the unknown.
Exactly, and that is also one of my favorites, because I've learned that, again, going back to Algonquin spirituality and universal spirituality, really, is that that calm mind is the foundation. That's the first step that must be attained. And the irony is that that's very hard for people today. Say, oh, just find a perfectly calm mind and then you'll be fine. As well, wait a minute, hold on. How do I get that? And so then you see the development in more sophisticated cultures of things like yoga and meditation. But there was a time when people didn't have so much trouble becoming calm. And that's a foundation for everything else. And all the other teachings really make sense once you find that calm. Because so one of the things that I like to point out in this, you know, you and I talked about medicine sometimes, there's the reptilian brain, which can be very chaotic. And then there's the hippocampus, which is storing the information you need in order to be resilient, and linked to the cerebellum, which, you know, controls your motor skills. But then those connect then to the frontal cortex and then the neocortex. But if the reptilian brain is experiencing fight or flight, then all those parts of the brain disconnect and can't communicate with each other, and then you kind of go blank and you can't remember your own name. And I think everybody's experienced that at some point. So it's from a more scientific point of view, it's true what the most ancient people in every culture have said, is that, you know, cultivating a quiet mind is the foundation. And I think you sent me something about a quiet mind. Do you remember? It was years ago. I think I can find it, but it's. I've learned more and more that that is the most essential thing. Because then this intuitive quality that I use to create this book then comes into play. You wrote, "Truth dawns upon a quiet mind, so drink water." Right? Didn't you? Wasn't that you? Or maybe you quoted it for me.
Only when I'm quiet can I really listen to what's happening to the river, what the river's singing about, and can I listen and hear the wisdom that's available from all the sources of beauty around me.
And when your mind becomes clouded, they all disappear. And almost instantly, it's like they're just gone. And my favorite illustration of that was when I was in the Himalayas, by the way, and fairly young. And I woke up early in the morning in this mud hut with this Sherpa. And I looked out, and I could see Mount Everest, Sagarmatha, in front of me through the window. And it framed the doorway framed the mountain. And I thought, this is so extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it, but it looks like all the pictures. And yet it looks much better than the pictures. And then the clouds started to come in for the day because it was summertime, and they fairly quickly completely obliterated the vision of Mount Everest until it didn't look like there was any mountain at all, and it was just clouds. I'll never forget that. And this is what can happen. And again, we're in a tumultuous time, and I do read the news, and I do follow all that, and I have to be very careful. I mean, I think it's a duty as a citizen to read all this stuff, that some of it's horrible. But there's a danger that that chaotic side of that could trigger this clouding of my mind, and then I wouldn't be able to even remember Algonquin history or the words of the Temple Within or be able to go for more, because there's much more. There's 11 other temples. I have to be very careful about that. And somebody saying angry words could trigger that, those clouds rolling in, and then everything just disappears. And I know I think everybody's had that moment where they can't remember why they're here or what they were doing or what their next assignment in the universe was. It can vanish. And the thing is not to panic, of course, because it doesn't really vanish. It's those clouds covering Mount Everest. Mount Everest is gigantic. And the same thing, our soul's journey through the mountain of life is gigantic. And there is the mountain of life. It's known in various stories. But when it disappears because of those clouds, it's just that something has upset the balance of the quietude that is the foundation of everything we're doing, if we're doing it right. And to just let it go, let it calm down, and then stop throwing stones in the pond, you know what I'm saying? Just for a while.
My ability to listen is a great friend and companion. But if I lose the ability to listen, the world becomes stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Evan.
Well, you're welcome. There's a lot's going on. A lot of good things are happening. And, we're happy to talk about that.
Yes. Well, maybe we can talk further. I think there's more to talk about with this book. And
okay.
You've been listening to A Living World Conversation with Evan Pritchard. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.